and Richland County. The extension office provided us some coins to be hidden in our caches, and we hope that people move them on and don't try to pocket them. But so we're kind of excited about having our 4-H club and, you know, teaching our kids how to run the unit, so maybe we can just stay in the car.
Do you guys have a group that you're part of? This is pretty much the Sumner contingency.
Crawford County had one for a while, and then they got married and had a baby, and so the meetings became less of a priority.
Well, they had that legs group over in Holly, Little Leech of Geocaching Society, that it just kind of fell by the wayside.
SIGA.
There's CIGA, I think.
That's just too far for us.
That's up at Decatur where we're going tomorrow.
Okay. But it's too far to travel just for a monthly meeting.
Well, that's it with Flag 2 Catching Podcast from Sumner, Illinois. Unfortunately, I won't be able to make the event, but I'll hear all about it.
In the next episode, Elaine and I get a guided tour of the InYards front lawn. We continue down the sidewalk to see the decorations that the neighbors have allowed them to put in their yard. Finally, we go to the giant geocache hidden in the InYards backyard. This concludes the Slogga Podcast. For more information about the Slogga Group and geocaching in the St. Louis, Missouri area, go to www.geostl.com. Here's wishing you a strong signal and a trusty bearing.
It's going to be on October the 20th. We're going to have bonfire toward the evening. We'll have hot dogs. We're going to have a night cache. We're going to have 8 caches loggable that day, and they're all going to lead up to a murder mystery.
The murder mystery, that's a new event this year?
That's the first time we've ever done it. We'd have never got it done without STP-10 and Knitter Girl.
We decided in the theme of the season it would be good. Cachers are pretty good at discovering things, so we thought we might be able to dig up a body and see if they can't figure out who done it.
Is Halloween an annual event or everyday event?
It's an everyday event around here.
Tell me a little bit about how you got interested in Halloween.
My wife and I was married on Halloween, 1985. We've been decorating every year since then, and just to add to it, Mike Anderson said, you got an awful lot of stuff here, and it'd be nice to get some cashers involved and where they come out and see it. It just blossomed from there.
Has your wife always been to Halloween, or did she get into this by virtue of marriage?
I think more by virtue of marriage. I kind of got conned into it.
She's a convert.
How soon do you prepare, and how long do you keep it out?
We start usually middle September. And it'll all be done November 1st. It takes basically 30 days to put it out.
A friend of mine, a Whistle in the Dark, was working at the radio station in Ollie, and she'd heard about the display they put on. So we came over and looked at it, and they invited us in the house just like we've been known them all our lives. And we started talking about it, thought this would be a great thing for a geocaching event. So we started talking to Gary, and he took the ball and ran with it from there. If it gets any bigger, we're going to have to move it somewhere.
How many people from the Sumner community come, and how many from out of the area?
Most of them's away from here. There's us from Sumner, and then the rest of them are from other areas.
How do you guys get involved with this through association, and what keeps you coming back?
We live just a few houses down from them, and we had decorated for Halloween. And then when they moved in and started decorating for Halloween, we just really thought that it could be a neighborhood event, try to put more stuff out every year. Geocache with them all the time. We have 2 kids. They have 2 kids. It's easier to go all together. So we're a big caching group of 8. We're pretty obvious.
Everyone here is a geocacher?
We were all geocachers in the beginning.
So you all knew each other through geocaching?
And neighbors, yes.
In order to make this event work, how do you guys participate in it?
We kind of bounce around ideas off of each other and see what would be good. Try and keep something new every year. Last year we did prize giveaway. We had the alien autopsy. I think that went over pretty well. This year we're trying to come up with something a little more creative. Building new props, and a lot of the props we build are handmade. You don't buy them in stores. Kind of adds a little bit to it. I live in town, so I bring all my props and stuff out here and set them up the day of the event.
This year I wrote the murder mystery. Everybody's like, oh, you deal with it. You just do whatever you want and it'll be great.
Can you explain the Insane Asylum email address that you have? What's behind that?
Eventually I'm going to have a big website, and it'll be in your insane asylum. You know, ever since I've been decorating, the kids would come up and they told me, they said, you know, you are the king of Halloween. It just kind of went from there.
Insane with our decorations. Okay. That's where the insane asylum sticks.
Is there also a cache in your yard?
Yes. In our backyard.
Lawrence County's largest cache container is here at the house.
When I go find that, am I just a stranger walking through your woods and you know it's a geocacher? I mean, you don't mind the strangers coming through?
No, they just go through.
Okay.
We generally know where they're headed.
Now, if they're there for 30 minutes, you go out and help them?
Yeah. They have trouble getting the lid off. It's a big container.
If they have trouble finding it.
And then we point them to the ones down the street at Wolfpack.
There's, I think, 12 here within about 3 miles in town.
Now, who's responsible for getting the donations or the prizes? And
it's always been up to Wolfpack, and we kind of split it a little bit, take some pressure off of him. And like I say, there are going to be 8 caches this year. There's 4 of us, so we'll each hide 2 caches, and each cache will have a clue as to what they'll need for the murder mystery.
What is the sequence of events throughout the day?
The event starts at 1 o'clock. We get registration out of the way. This year we're going to do a little something different. Jim's going to set up a place to take pictures of all the geocachers. We can put faces with geocachers' names. Then we're going to send them on their clue hunt, basically taking off, going, looking for those 8 caches that will have clues to who did it. When they return, then we're going to start the fire, start roasting wieners. We will give out the prizes, other than the main prize for the one who figures out who did it. Then we'll have our night cache. As it gets darker, we'll go to that.
Who wants to tell me a little bit about the night hayride?
Last few years, we've had a nighttime hayride. Last year went to the paranormal investigation in the cemetery. However, it's been increasingly difficult to get a trailer and a big enough truck to pull all the people. So anyway, this year we wanted to do something different. We'd done a hayride last 2 years. The first year we had a hayride where we took them to a few small caches here in the area, and we tried to scare as many of them as possible along the way, pretty successfully, I might add. Concluded with the paranormal last year, and then this year I think we're going to try to do just the night cache, which will probably be everybody has to provide their own transportation to the night cache. It'll be in the local state park here, and I think will be extremely enjoyable.
Let me switch gears just a little bit. Say your caching name and what you do in real life. Let me start with you, Gary.
King of Halloween, I'm hospital maintenance.
Queen of Halloween, I work at a bank. I'm a bank teller.
I'm Mike Anderson, 1492. I've worked 25 years at a water plant in Olney, and I've managed to retire finally. I just geocache.
I'm Brandy Whitney, Wolfpack 359, and I'm a domestic engineer. That means I'm a stay-at-home mom. I'm a goddess also.
Who eats bonbons all day long?
Yeah, that's what he thinks I do.
Brent Whitney. Unfortunately, my job at Marathon Petroleum Company gets in the way of my geocaching and prop building aspirations, but I work there as an instrumentation technician.
Brian Whitney. I'm a healthcare professional.
I'm Knitter Girl. I am a knitter, designer of patterns, dyer of yarns, but the day job is a distance education advisor at a local university.
Now, back to Halloween. Tell me about Halloween from the time you remember it to now. What has Halloween meant to you? Is there any Halloween stories, something that really grabbed you along the way? And I'll work my way backwards.
Well, Halloween's just always been the best time of the year. We would decorate like crazy for Halloween. It's just always been a great time of black cats and watching the scary shows on TV. As soon as the cold got into the air, it's like, okay, we can put out the Halloween decorations now.
Ever since I kind of moved out of the house, got my own place, every year around Halloween, I would try and decorate the yard. And of course, it ain't worth doing unless you can overdo it. We would decorate the yards and do a little bit more every year. Then the Inyerts moved into the area and we noticed their decorations, and that and caching, we just kind of got together.
Whenever me and my brother Brian was growing up, there was always a guy down the road that put a speaker in a prop and sat in the window and watched us marvel at it could talk back to us. And, you know, running around with a bunch of kids, the whole neighborhood had their porch lights on so that they could give you candy. Back then, you really didn't have to worry too much about people trying to sabotage candy and stuff. It was just a really, really good time of year. Always had a really good time. As I grew up, it was a little disappointing to drive around Sumner and see how many porch lights are off. I'm sure Gary feels the same way. We just all wanted to put something up so the kids can have something fond to remember when they're younger, so that they could look back and say, you know, that was a really good time in their life. I think a lot of people aren't giving out candy like they used to, and you're taking some of those great memories away from
these kids that are growing up.
My best Halloween memory isn't one of my own Halloween memories. Brent and Brian are both very artistic and have been designing, creating all kinds of costumes and masks. Their families do. Every year they used to have a Halloween party and we would drive to Kentucky. Brent made a Halloween costume that was the Predator mask. And that was in the day of dusters and cowboy boots. And he went down to Brian's house because we lived near him at the time. He got down on his knees and had that duster and that mask on. So he looked like a little kid. And then when Brian's friend answered the door at the house, he stood up and jumped up and traumatized the adult. So we love to traumatize adults. With our Halloween display, I really think that the adults probably get more entertainment out of it than the kids, because it seems like every year we have more adults coming back than kids coming back. They really enjoy it.
Halloween. It was good in a way, but it was bad. The first time I ever got arrested was here in Sumner back in a previous century on Halloween. They're having a Halloween party at the school. We came over from Ollie. We were just having a good time, and somebody was going around letting down streetlights. In those days, they had a chain to let the fixture down so they could change the bulb. Well, somebody had dropped a few, and they had hit a few cars with it, and we got accused of it. I didn't do it. So we ended up in jail that night. The witness, when we were in the cell, and we all changed clothes real quick, they changed shirts, hats, whatever, and he couldn't identify any of us, so they had to let us go. Well, we didn't quite get away. We got trapped out on Route 50. There was three guys with chains, destroyed the car we were in. We got out of there and finally, after banging off a couple of cars. It was an exciting night. We talked about that one for a while. Well, we didn't talk about it for at all for a while. And we talked about it a lot. We didn't mention it for a long time. There were no warrants, so nobody got in trouble, and we didn't do it either. That's my story.
I can just remember on school nights coming home and getting all excited, and you didn't even have time to eat supper. You just wanted to get your clothes changed and get ready to go out and get that candy, take your pillowcase and go running down the street. Then as I got older, I met somebody who really had an interest in Halloween. Probably within a week after he proposed, he says, "Can we get married on Halloween?" He didn't want to get married in the traditional attire, but I think I kind of persuaded him on that, and we did that. Then we had our reception down in an old cow barn and had a masquerade party for our reception. We've just been decorating ever since. We've just tried to increase and add to our decorations.
Gary, anything? Maybe I can squeeze something out of you about Halloween?
The first one I really remember when I was a kid, I must have been maybe 4 or 5 years old. My mother dressed up like a fortune teller. The kids would come by, and all we had was an old white volleyball, and she had a swami outfit on, and she'd tell the kids his fortunes. We had so many people that we had ran out that year. That was back when they had bottles of pop. We'd given out bottles of RC Cola. There was a little store, and I'd run all evening back and forth just buying more pop, and the kids would come by, and they'd say, "We've already been here, but we want to hear these other people's fortunes." So it just stemmed from that, and just every year there was nothing better than getting makeup on or a mask on and going. Any true haunter, the best thing that you can do is find out that you gave somebody a petality, and it's better if it's an adult instead of kids.
What has driven you to take it to this extent?
Within the last few years, there's been 12 to 15, maybe 18 houses in the whole town that's giving away candy. We just decided we'd try to do something to get more people to give out candy or treats or just to let the kids have something to do. One thing that I remember, if it was a school night, I never had time to eat supper. Last year or 2 years ago was through the week, and we cooked hot dogs for all the kids. They had hot dogs and drinks, and they put their ketchup, mustard, and relish on it. Had a lot of adults thank us because kids didn't have anything to eat yet, and that's something different than candy.
Between now and next Saturday, what do you still have to do? It looks like everything's pretty much out here. Are you just going to wait till time goes, or is there more things to put together?
I'd say it's probably 75% out. We still got quite a bit of small decorating to do. We're not even going to do anything in the house this year. It's just time's getting away from us. It seems like the more cashing we do, the less time we have to decorate the inside. So, you know, you have to have a happy medium, and I think we're coming to the point where the inside stuff's just going to stay in boxes.
Well, let me go around again and ask you guys about this event. What do you like about this event, or what are your experiences been? What is your favorite parts of this event?
The thing I liked about the event the most is It's amazing how many kids that come to the event wants to get their pictures taken with everything. You get to watching and pretty soon you see the adults wanting their pictures taken and they got the kids over there running the cameras. It just makes you feel good. You know, you've done something that somebody maybe 150, 200 mile away is willing to come spend the evening with you. That's a good feeling.
This was not my experience, but it was something I read on one of the event cache pages. A couple had brought their kid, and on the way home, he started crying. He wanted to go back one more time and press a button and have his head pop up.
That was our house.
That's a memory that really touched him. Hopefully, he'll remember that. Memories of the event or during the event or what you look forward to?
I just enjoy getting to meet all the new cachers and all the old cachers that have been here before and putting faces with names, seeing how everybody's eyes light up when they pull up at our domain here. Their eyes are wide and mouths are dropped open in awe because of all of the decorations all the way up and down the road here. It just gives you a good feeling inside to know that you're giving somebody memories of something. It helps us have memories too.
Well, I agree with all that. It's fun to have a bunch of people come in from a lot of different states and enjoy themselves. The thing I enjoyed last year most was scorching everybody's retina.
Oh, yeah.
We had Sparkler Bomb, 1,600 sparklers. 1,600 of them went off at one time.
Wow.
I have a video of it. I said, holy cow. People like they couldn't see a thing for a while. That was a lot of fun. And they're not going to let me do it this year. I had some, but couldn't see for a week. But I've had a lot of fun with it, meeting all these people here and working with them and putting out caches. I might add one thing. Whistlin and I, Mike Anderson, are releasing 20 caches in addition to what's being put out for the event. So the people who come and camp and stay with us, we'll have plenty of new caches to look forward to.
That little boy, we didn't really realize he was down there, and we have a Uncle Mort. He's in his mausoleum. When you push the button, he jumps out at you about 8 feet. We saw his picture down there pushing the button and enjoying Mort giving him a heart attack over and over. I don't know how many times Mort jumped out of the box, but he had to have his pants fixed this year.
I just remember the first year of having the event. A lot of the people that come, you've done their caches, you've read their logs, and you see their name, but you couldn't pick them out in a lineup. When they come here, you're complete strangers, but yet you're not. Just like one big happy family when they come. It's almost like you know them after you find out who they are. I mean, you're like, oh, okay, that's what this person looks like. And putting faces with names, really making that bond, it starts way before that. And it's just amazing how close you can get with someone and not really know what they look like.
One of the things that kind of struck me, I don't know that I really noticed it much the first year, but last year, I seemed like I got two or three comments from cachers saying, I can't believe you don't charge for this. We're wanting to try and keep this free to the cachers and everyone that wants to come and attend. That's, we'll try and keep it free. I've heard of other big events where they charge you a cover charge to come in and also to even hit the caches. As far as I can tell, we're not going to do that.
One of the neat things is how people have kind of come to expect that there's going to be something new and different here, and they just can't wait for it. The first year, we had a cache at our house called Dr. Feelgood. It was homemade slime that they had to reach their hand down into. Then last year was the alien autopsy, so people have kind of come to expect and can't disappoint the public. We had a geocoin design last year, and we had some people ask, are you going to have another coin this year? Maybe every other time.
My brother, he designed keychains and bags and stuff, which are available on the site if anybody's interested. The t-shirts, we went with orange the last 3 years. I think next year we're probably going to go with something a little different because not everybody likes orange as much as we might.
It is good for hunting.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why we picked that is because some of our caches are in woods and in Red Hill where it's deer hunting season, so we want to try to keep people as safe as possible. And
I know one time we were up north of Oblong and we were all about 300 caches and thought we were the best cachers in the whole world. We walked about half a mile into the cemetery to find it, and we happened to run into a cacher from the Louisville area. And at that time, our child's 3 now, but she was just 12 months old or so I always carried her in a backpack. And we got up there, there's one tree and there's a rock up against it, so there's no other place for this cache to be. And we look and we look and we look, and we've been there 20 minutes. And finally, you know, we were getting really frustrated. We turn around and the baby has the cache in her hand in my backpack. One of the kids had pulled it out and given it to her, and they thought it was going to be a good idea.
Yeah, to watch us stand around for 20 minutes looking, knowing that they had it in their pockets just to give it to Bailey at the right time. Really great time.
We told them they had to stay in the car after that.
since this is the Slaga Geocaching Podcast and we started talking about geocaching, let me go around and find out, just like in Halloween, what is it about geocaching that you guys like?
We just got to the point where we just sitting around doing nothing. I'm on several Halloween lists on the internet, and they started talking about geocaching, and I, of course, clicked the link, and I thought, well, yeah, this might be interesting. Went and did two or three, four, and thought, well, yeah, I may do this again, may not. Finally came up to one we couldn't find, and I had my eight up my mind that it just wasn't there. Thought, well, okay, it's not there, this isn't no fun, and a day or two later, I look, and uh-oh, somebody's found it. So I go back, and still can't find it. I wait a while, other people logging, and I thought, they're not any better than I am, you know? And I went back, and we looked till we did find it. And then that's how I was hooked. Once somebody else could find something that I couldn't.
Well, he kind of drugged me into it. But yeah, he drags me into a lot of things. We kind of did that little bit at a time there, and then decided on the weekends that that was kind of fun, and it got the kids out away from the TV, and none of us were just sitting on the couch watching TV, and we was actually getting a little bit of exercise. I log it with him as King of Halloween. We just took off with it, and the kids kind of enjoyed it. They like the bigger caches where there's something in them.
So then we found out that Wolfpack was here close to us, and that
we had known him before. Then she come up to me one day at the bank and said, "Do you happen to be King of Halloween?" And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" She says, "We're Wolfpack." And that's how we kind of got connected. And then we met Brian and Christy through them. We met him because Mike Anderson, because we couldn't find his caches. That's over at Olney.
Me and Gene wore out my battery on my cell phone one time. How I got started in caching, shortly after the 911 incident, I was at work one Saturday afternoon. I saw a car parked in the area. I'd been there for quite a while, so I started walking down to it. I was also going back to one of our ponds with a machete in my hand. I was going to trim some brush. So I walked down to this car, and I got a little piece of paper, and I'm writing the number down. I see this woman and a boy coming toward me. So she's walking toward me, and I'm wondering, what is she doing? And she's wondering, who's this guy with the machete in his hand, right? So we're kind of circling each other, and she starts telling me about geocaching. I'd never heard of it. Next weekend, I was going on vacation, going to see my daughter and her family in Ohio. So we started talking about it. My son-in-law thought that was the greatest thing he'd ever heard about. Within 30 minutes, we'd gone and bought two Magellan Sport Track Pros. We were off and running. We had our first caches in Ohio, and then came back, and I found out that I enjoy hiding them more than I like finding them. Whistling in the dark, my partner, she's a lot worse at it than I am. For instance, she had a cache called A Salute to Colonel Potter. Now, I came home from work one night, midnight. I was working evening shift. I walked in the garage. I stepped out of the car. I'm like, what is that smell? It was just reeking in there. She was still up, so I called her. I said, what is going on out here? Oh, I'm going to make a cache. Out of what? Said, horse manure. A friend of hers bought her a bag of horse manure. She dried it outside, dipped it into a whole quart of polyurethane, and she put it on a container, and we put it up by a horse trail at Samdale Park, and it looked just like a pile of horse manure. Okay. And it was a cache underneath it. We had a party a couple years ago, a geocaching party, and she took some natural sponges and shaped them like mushrooms and put it out and put a little container underneath it.
Yes.
It was spring of the year, and mushrooms were up. And it was a long time for anybody found it.
Brent's the one who initially got me started. I didn't enjoy it so much as Poison Ivy loves me. I usually end up with at least one or two shots a year from Poison Ivy, and so I decided I wasn't going to go with him, and then he told me that there's some actually in town. You know, they're not all 4 miles in the woods. I decided that I would go along. We do cache with the King of Halloween. I think our favorite time is just as soon as the car doors open, those kids are out of there, and our favorite thing to do is we will walk one way with the GPS away from the cache, and as soon as the kids get over in that area, they start looking. And then all four of the adults will hightail it the other direction.
That's the only chance we got.
We don't have a chance against them. We just really have a good, fun time. I'm always the driver, always the leader, watching the map, always take a wrong road, always have Gary saying, she took another wrong road. I can U-turn just about anywhere.
At first, my coworkers I worked with told me about it about a year before I actually got into it. I borrowed a GPS from another coworker that had one and just went out and did a few by myself and then started doing a few with my coworker and really got interested in it and came home and told my wife about it. And she said, that just does not sound as interesting at all to me as what you're making out to be. And it's like, well, I cash by just Wolf 359 because I'm a Trek fan, and people might catch the Star Trek reference. After we all got involved, me and my wife and both kids, I changed my name to Wolf Pack to include the whole family. I wanted to tell a funny story. We was out caching with the Inyurts one time, and I've got a mapping GPS, so it's a little easier for us to try to hit the right road. So we're always a good 100 feet in front of them whenever we're going down these roads. Bailey, the little baby, she was hungry. We wasn't too close to anything, so we had some saltine crackers. Well, I got some crackers out of the package and handed them back to her, and she didn't like them, and I smelled them, and they were stale. I mean, they had went bad sometime, and so I rolled down the window, and I tossed the cracker out. You know, it's food. Some animal's going to eat it. We pull up to the next cache, which is in a cemetery, and they said, something flew in our window and busted into a million pieces, and it's all over the inside of our vehicle. Oh. And it was that cracker. I threw it out, and it went completely up and went straight into their window and exploded. So I told them, you know, I've been training from Buddhist monks on the deadly art of cracker throwing. It's just a talent of mine, I guess.
Well, as far as where it kind of started from was from my brother. He's the one that told me about it, and it kind of stems a long line of other hobbies that he's got me started into. So he took me on the first few caches. I didn't have a GPS at the time, and we used his, and then after that, within a week, I had my own. Cache in the woods is probably better than a lot of the town caches. A lot of times, the quality of the cache is better than quantity caches. You go sometimes to the bigger towns, and they're hidden under lampposts. After you do about 60 of those, that's enough. You want to find some good quality hides. A short walk is nice. More than a mile, I may not hit it. But.
And if you're looking for any that he has hid, if there's a big briar patch, it's in the middle of it. He's not happy unless you're bleeding.
I need to start putting some Band-Aids in my caches, I think.
I think he's just trying to stem some good memories, because some of our best memories are from night caches, and the most memorable ones where we've left the woods bleeding.
Well, shortly after Brent got Brian involved, Brian told me about it, and we went out to the Sumner Cemetery. I can remember the first cache finding was this tree in the cemetery. It was just so interesting how the puzzle, and you can find the little hints, kind of like solving the mysteries. My favorite are the micro caches. I'm a micro specialist.
She's really good at micros. She's had a few first to finds too without me, but we usually go together.
Kind of if our travels take us somewhere convenient, we'll hit them, but otherwise. Next month I'm going to Nashville, so it's like,
Yeah, Mike will have it.
Gary, you want to wrap something up?
Hope to see everybody at the event. We'd like to get it bigger and better every year. We had 5 states last year, and we'd like to add a state or two every year. So I think they'd have a good time.
We're going to try to make this event our 1,000th cache. That's one thing we're kind of looking forward to. We got about 21 more to hit before the event.
I just want to add one small thing. Luana and I have just recently started the first 4-H club in the state of Illinois that's geocaching only. We'll be doing our first meeting sometime this month. I know we had over 20 kids sign up for it. We're doing inclusive Lawrence and Richland County. The extension office provided us some coins to be hidden in our caches, and we hope that people move them on and don't try to pocket them. But so we're kind of excited about having our 4-H club and, you know, teaching our kids how to run the units, so maybe we can just stay in the car.
Do you guys have a group that you're part of? This is pretty much the Sumner contingency.
Crawford County had one for a while, and then they got married and had a baby, and so the meetings became less of a priority.
Well, they had that Legs group over in Ollie, Little Leech of Geocaching Society, that it just kind of fell by the wayside.
SIGA.
Yeah, they're more kids, I think.
That's just too far for us.
That's up at Decatur where we're going tomorrow.
Okay. But it's too far to travel just for a monthly meeting.
Well, that's it with Log 2 Caching Podcast from Sumner, Illinois. Unfortunately, I won't be able to make the event, but I'll hear all about it.
In the next episode, Elaine and I get a guided tour of the Inyarts front lawn. We continue down the sidewalk to see the decorations that the neighbors have allowed them to put in their yard. Finally, we go to the giant geocache hidden in the Inyarts backyard. This concludes the Slaga Podcast. For more information about the Slaga Group and geocaching in the St. Louis, Missouri area, go to www.geostl.com. Here's wishing you a strong signal and a trusty bearing.